Intervju Radija Študent.
Trinajsti pripovedovalski festival Pravljice danes 2010 bo danes večer na Stežaj odprl svoja pripovedovalska usta z nastopom škotskega pripovedovalca Davida Campbella. Če ste uspeli ujeti njegovo predavanje na oddelku za etnografijo in kulturno antropologijo Filozofske fakultete, ali pa ste se udeležili njegovih pripovedovalskih delavnic v Cankarjevem domu, veste, da imamo opravka živahnim, okiltanim gospodom 70-ih let, ki svoj govor nenehno prepleta s takšnimi in drugačnimi zgodbami. Rad in veliko pa tudi prepeva škotske ljudske pesmi. Predvsem pa je David Campbell eden mednarodno najbolj prepoznavnih škotskih pripovedovalcev, ki je svoje interpretacije ljudskih zgodb objavil tudi na več zgoščenkah in v knjižni obliki. Za razumevanje pričujočega intervjuja velja omeniti še en škotski pripovedovalski ponos, sicer že pokojnega trevlerja Duncana Williamsona, ki je veljal in še velja za najpomembnejšega nosilca škotske pripovedne tradicije in ki je premogel izjemno bogat in raznolik repertoar škotskih ljudskih zgodb in pesmi. David Campbell se ga v zgodbah, ki jih pripoveduje, pogosto spominja. Pripravlja pa tudi obsežno predstavitev njegovega življenja in dela.
How did I become a storyteller? Well, I think in some really deep way, you were always a storyteller. When I was very, very little, 3 or so, and an auntie would visit, she said, oh, David is always telling me these stories. And then all through school, I was interested in stories and a drama and poetry I loved. And then, to cut a story kind of short, I then was teaching English in a secondary school. And I loved that as well, because I was teaching poetry and I was teaching drama, and I loved the kids, and it was just great. Teaching, in a way, makes you very conscious of being connected, you know, with the pupils. So that was that. And then I suddenly became tired of... I didn't want to do it anymore for... Not because I didn't like the subject, not because I didn't like the kids, not because I didn't like the staff. Something inside me changed, and I just overnight said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And life has always taken me by the hand. I never seem to decide anything. Never. And the result is, I was staying with a woman at the time called Leslie, and I said, I'm not going to teach anymore. And one day she said, there's what you should do. And it was an advertisement for a radio producer. And so I said, oh, right. So I applied for that. And the interview was actually the last day of term. And the result is we had lunch the last day of term, which had a considerable amount of drink in it. And the result is I drove all the way to Glasgow with quite a bit pissed, really, quite drunk. But anyhow, I was very relaxed during the interview because I'd had several whiskies with the lunch and I was feeling very easy. And I think I got the job because the person that came to be my boss asked me about a very strange thing on my CV. And I said, well, that is a very odd story, a very strange story. And it is a strange story. I don't have time to tell you it now. And so this man was a beautiful man as well. And he said, when I appointed you, I knew you would be exciting, but I knew you could be trouble as well. And he became a fantastic friend. He was a great manager of our department. And so I loved working in radio, and I was working with actors and actresses, and producing drama and stories all the time. So I was really watching how people were telling stories, and most actors can't tell stories. They're hopeless. You know, they want to act and so forth. And, you know, you'd say to them, Billy, you know, just be you. Just be you. Tell the story as if it is you, Billy. And it'd still be, no, Billy, you know. And don't let the words tell themselves. So I learned, in a way, a lot by knowing how a story should be and having other people. I mean, some of them were wonderful. Just a small handful were really great. They could make the story live quietly, beautifully. So then when I was in the BBC for quite a while, we had this beautiful man retired, and he was taken over our department by a dwarf, a man who had no idea about people, no idea about radio. He was a bully. He bullied the women and deceived the men. He was a tragedy. And so he and I were never going to agree. And so I decided this was a good time to leave, because I left the BBC. Oh, at the same time, I had met Duncan. That was very important. I met Duncan, and by an odd means as well. And then one day I read Duncan's story, Mary and the Seal, a beautiful story, and I wanted to broadcast it. This was when I was still working in the BBC. So wrote to the publisher and said, we want to broadcast this program, this story. And I said, but it's a little long for the program, so I'll need to cut it. So she phoned me back and said, you can't use it. I said, why not? She said, because Duncan Williamson says that is the length of the story and that is the way it has to remain. I said, I'll go and see him. So I got in my old van and I drove to the little farmhouse where he lived with his wife, Linda, and two kids. And they were no longer living in the tent at this time. And he was standing at the door, like John Wayne. He says, hello, you David Campbell, the BBC? I said, yes, I am. He says, you want to use my story? I said, yes. He said, you don't like it? I said, I love it. I absolutely love the story, but I think the story is longer than my program. But I love it. And he came forward, threw his arms around me, totally. He says, David Campbell, you and me are going to be the very best of friends. Come in. I said, wait a minute. So I went back out to the van, and I brought in a bottle of whiskey. And he says, oh, very good. So we sat down, and, of course, we drank the whiskey. And Linda came in with supplies of tea and sandwiches, and later she joined us, and so on. So that was the first of my long, the beginning of my marriage to Duncan. At his funeral, someone said, not everyone knows about Duncan Williamson's third marriage to David Campbell. But for all these years, from that time on, we travelled thousands and thousands of miles up and down this country. We went to Canada, we went to Iceland, we went to Israel, we went to Holland, we went all over the place. And it was a difficult marriage. Yeah. But it was also a beautiful one, extremely. I loved him very much, but God, he was hard. There are many stories I could tell you about that. Yeah, many. But he one day said, I don't remember if it was a party, David Campbell's now going to tell a story. So I told the story that that I'd met him by, Mary and the Seal. And he said, David Campbell, you told that story better than me, that's your story. Now, I mean, he was a big liar anyhow. But anyhow, he said, I want you to come with me to the schools. So I used to drive him everywhere, all over Scotland, right up to Orkney, where Tom is, beyond Orkney, up to Shetland, way to the far south. We went to Ireland, we went to Wales, we went everywhere, thousands of miles in my van. And so I learned a huge amount from Duncan. But the most I learned from him, in a way, was this kind of saying hello to people, you know? I mean, I'm very good at that anyhow. But with the little ones, you know, Duncan would spend 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, just playing his Jew's harp and having fun and so forth, before he'd ever even begin or think of beginning to tell a story. And I used to think at first, you know, when is he ever going to begin? But I realized, you know, that the most deeply important thing is to absolutely feel that you are with the people and they're with you and that you're their friends. And Duncan used to say, if you make a friend of people, you can tell them any story and they'll listen to it, you know? And he wasn't being cynical, he was just telling the truth. So my storytelling, of course, was from a different kind of education than his. We got on amazingly well, but he, you know, bloody workshops, you know? He just didn't believe in any way in workshops because they learned their stories like a sponge, you know, by osmosis, just by absorption, and the songs. But so that's really how I sort of began to tell stories as a way of living. And that was in 1987, I suppose, or then about. So that's a long time ago now. I was invited to New Zealand, and then people, when you go to one festival, like in New Zealand, somebody says, wow, and then I was invited to the Yukon in Northwest Canada, fantastic, and other places, just because in some way people liked what you were doing, you know.
Škotska ima močno tradicijo folklornega pripovedovanja, na katero se zelo naslanjajo tudi sodobni škotski pripovedovalci. Škotski mednarodni pripovedovalski festival je eden najstarejših v Evropi. V letu 2009 je slavil svojo 20. obletnico. Več o načinu izbiranja in pripovedovanja zgodb in o škotski tradiciji pripovedovanja pa David Campbell.
How do you find stories? Do you search the books or something, or do you listen to other storytellers or other, I don't know, travelers or something?
Yeah, well, mainly I really believe you're far better to begin where you are. And so far as where I am is concerned, it's Scotland, but I feel equally close to Ireland. I love Ireland totally. And so, and the Celtic tradition of stories is completely shared between the two. And also Wales to some degree, and Britain and so on. So these stories are ones that I like, and many of these I've heard people tell, but equally there have been great collectors of these stories, translated from Gaelic or whatever, and they were collected from people telling the stories, not writing them. So. And some of these I've found in snatches and bits, you know, and I've put them together myself in a way that I think is complete, and also in a way that I think is true to the kind of rhythms and the poetry, because Gaelic and Celtic people have a great poetry of nature imagery. It's spectacular. It's not like, you know, modern urban life in any way. It's got that. So these stories are particularly kind of close to my feeling, but equally I will sometimes hear a story that I think is so interesting that I'll think, that's a great story, and I'll say to whoever it is, I'd love to tell that story. And in this country, in Scotland, people will always say, of course, do. If you go to a hopeless place like America, there are greedy, grasping, litigious, jealous, possessive unpleasant characters who think this is my story, you know? And most of the storytellers I know want to tell the stories and see it as a gift and all the rest. I mean, others. And storytellers who kind of want to be, well-known or famous or perform, they're boring, usually, as storytellers as well. I don't find that kind of storytelling interesting, you know?
You also tell stories from, I don't know, Africa?
Not often, but as I say, if there is one that really feels at home to me and that I like, and then I'll ask a person. But I'm very careful. I really think it's important to be careful about telling stories that come from another culture. I've seen people taking stories, for instance, from Japan, stories as delicate as a teacup, and turning them into something that I think is vulgar and completely untrue to the nature of the place they came from. And then I think some people are greedy and they just want to grab stories from anywhere. And it doesn't have much meaning, in my opinion, you know, to do that. And I think you can... sometimes people might see a story from Africa or wherever, and they just want they think this is a great story. I think if it touches their heart and there's some deep understanding of it, then it's okay. But I tend to be very careful about that, you know.
When you rework stories, how far do you go? I mean, you tell it in your words. Do you put the story in a contemporary society, in a way, you know, that it sounds like near to us now?
Yeah, not usually. I don't do that, no. Usually I find a story and it appeals to me. It's an old story. And then I just sort of let it sift in my mind. And sometimes something that I think is completely true to the spirit of it will just appear where I think maybe something is missing. And so I'll just put that into it. But I won't kind of put it into... I know some people will put an old story into, you know, a city. And I think that can be very interesting, but it's not what I tend to do. Not really. I mean, a story like Mary and the Seal, which was the one I found with Duncan, he told it one way, and I know I sort of saw in it something slightly different. I mean, the story really is about an old couple, and they have no children, and they both would love to have children, and, one day the woman has this little seal child, really. But to me, there was this amazing moment when she's looking out to sea. I just kind of saw it in my mind, and this mother seal pops out of the water, and she is looking, feeling sad, and then beside the mother seal pops a little seal, and she looks at them both and feels this desperate sadness, as if you're the lucky one. You're the lucky one, are you not? And to me, at that moment, the water laps over her feet and she feels this strange sensation, and the seal looks at her with these dark brown eyes as if saying something. And that doesn't happen in Duncan's version, but after he heard me telling it, it began to happen more in his version. So there was quite a number of things that that sort of thing that would happen in my seeing of what was happening, because it's always what you see what happens here at this moment, you know. And to me, that is exactly what happened at that moment. And Duncan, I think, then kind of believed that was what happened, and so that would come into his story.
You mentioned before that for you, the best way is to tell dramatic in a quiet way. Is this understood right?
Yes. Little Audrey Park, she's a little Irish woman, half blind, and she is an incredible storyteller, because she will just sit and tell you the story, not very loudly or anything, but she was so connected with it. And there's very little happening, you know, in gestures or anything, but the story is so vivid in her mind that you catch all of it, you know. So my storytelling, certainly, I mean, I think my... I'm kind of, because I've brought up not in Duncan's way, and been interested in drama and all that kind of thing, underneath, I have a sort of consciousness of what I'm doing, and probably in some vague way, you know, what's happening in my face or whatever. But it's so, but I don't tend to be, you know, I don't tend to jump about, but I do think hugely about, if I'm looking at a story, you know, feel the moods and how this mood will move, and also the fashioning of a story, you know, the rhythms of it, you know. All things are important. And just the beauty of the words, you know. So you can do all that without doing too much, you know, is my thought. It's a bit like radio, you know. So, yes, for me, I mean, I'm the opposite of someone like Ben Haggerty. Yeah, well, he's, yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
He and I were sharing an evening, and he said, I can't share the stage. I would blast people off it. And he uses the whole stage and, you know, and wears a cloak and walks about. And it's not my style, but he's very popular, you know, and that's his style. But, I mean, I couldn't be interested in that. It's too much like a performance. The whole tradition here is really not like that. They're more like the tent, the fire, Duncan talking to people, you know. And to me, a storytelling is a kind of extension of that, you know. And if I'm doing a workshop, I always say, you know, the best position for an audience is a hug. You know, you just, if you can hold people in the audience in that kind of way, that you can feel them as a kind of body, you know, then you're close to them. And so to me, it's any kind of story needs to have that real total connectedness, which is why, you know, I don't like it, in fact won't do it, to tell stories where you're in the light and the audience in the dark. I can't do that. I just can't actually do it, you know. I just feel as if I've been disconnected. You have to be able to see people and you know.
David Campbell bo keltske zgodbe pripovedoval danes ob 8 zvečer v klubu Cankarjevega doma na otvoritvenem večeru pripovedovalskega festivala Pravljice danes, naslovljenem Jutru iz ust. Večer pa bosta nadaljevala Katarina Juvančič in Dejan Lapanje. Z izborom škotskih in slovenskih ljudskih pesmi. Pripovedovalski festival Pravljice danes v naslednjem tednu ponuja še več zanimivih pripovedovalskih dogodkov, katerih obisk vam prav tako toplo priporočamo. Intervju je pripravila Špela Frlic.
Intervju Radia Študent.